Our next case is Duncan v. Schwartz, 073412. And Ms. Lansky, you're going to argue first. Shouldn't you be studying for finals right now?
Mm-hmm. I took my last final on Wednesday, actually.
What a way to celebrate.
It is. May it please the court. My name is Kelly Lansky. Co-counsel Elizabeth Callahan and I are Notre Dame law students here under the supervision of Robert Palmer. This court granted a certificate of appealability as to whether James Duncan was denied his right to self-representation. We represent Appellant Duncan and ask this court to grant his petition for habeas relief because he clearly and timely requested to proceed pro se, and the trial court violated his right to do so by failing to hold a Feretta inquiry. Duncan's request was clear. He told the court, "I would like to represent myself." And neither this court nor other federal courts require a defendant to be especially articulate or forceful or to state an exact phrase in order to invoke the right to self-representation. But in the real-world context in which a layperson defendant such as Duncan asserts this constitutional right, it's hard to imagine a clearer choice of phrasing than "I would like to represent myself." Especially clear in this case, because just the day before, during a pretrial hearing, Duncan withdrew a motion to proceed pro se, but put the court on notice, telling him, "If I believe my attorneys are representing me ineffectively, I would like to proceed pro se." And then the very next morning, only partway through the state's case in chief, Duncan told the court, "I believe I'm receiving ineffective assistance of counsel. I'd like to represent myself." Construing that request.
Didn't he start out with a motion to proceed as co-counsel, though?
At the initial request at trial, Your Honor?
Yeah.
No. While the government argues.
It was filed in a pretrial motion, as I understand.
My understanding of that, Your Honor, was that it was a motion to proceed pro se. The record indicates that the court treated it as such. It was a hearing on the motion to proceed pro se. Regardless of that, Duncan did still advise the court that he would want to invoke the right to proceed pro se.
Didn't he say, "It's okay with me if you make these guys co-counsels,"
and he said,
just wanted to cross-examine certain witnesses?
He said, "If you want to make these guys co-counsels," and the government attempts to argue that that's what he meant. He wanted to have hybrid representation. However, that argument is unreasonable in light of both the law surrounding this issue as well as the other circumstances of this case. As I previously stated, he also told the court the day before if he was dissatisfied with counsel, he would want to proceed pro se. He then told the court, "I am dissatisfied with counsel. I would like to proceed pro se." His response to the court that he would like to re-examine witnesses and cross them was not a response that that's all he would like to do. At that point in the trial, that's what his attorneys had done for him. He felt it was done defectively, and so it's only reasonable for this layperson defendant to tell the court, "I'd like to redo this," before he proceeded as a pro se.
Isn't it a little disruptive, though, partway through the trial to say, "Well, wait a minute now, I'd like to start representing myself on certain witnesses," or what?
In certain cases, it could be. However, this court has held that a request made on the first day of trial was timely, and we argue that in this case, it would not have caused any undue delay. Actually, Duncan, in addition, told the court, "I don't want to hold this trial up. I want to keep it going." He did not request any kind of recess and simply wanted to proceed pro se, discarding his defective attorneys. Now, one of the reasons that courts often require this or always require this clear request is so they don't inadvertently waive the right to counsel. But there was nothing inadvertent in this case about Duncan requesting not once but three times that he be allowed to represent himself. And while counsel is the default, the Feretta court stated that a court may not force counsel on a defendant. And failing to hold a Feretta inquiry in this case, where the defendant was dissatisfied with defense counsel, when he asked to represent himself, places a burden on defendants, conditioning their constitutional right to self-representation on the utterance of some magic phrase, and only that one phrase, in order to invoke that right. In addition, the government argued that Duncan's supposed pretrial hearing, or his actual pretrial hearing plus the supposedly ambiguous statement, together equaled the right for hybrid counsel, or the request for hybrid counsel. Actually, that pretrial hearing served to put the court on notice that he was aware of the right to proceed pro se and that he would wish to invoke that right if his attorneys were ineffective. Neither the Illinois appellate court during post-conviction hearings nor the district court held or even hinted that Duncan's request was or should have been denied as untimely. Looking at the record itself, at the time Duncan made his third request, the court acknowledged the right but said it was too late to invoke it. In contrast, at the time of Duncan's first request, made the first morning of trial, the court merely flatly denied the motion, stating your motion is denied to represent yourself, but made no mention at all as to the timeliness of that motion. In addition, Duncan made the request at the first point in which he realized he wanted to invoke the right to self-representation. And as the Sixth Circuit recently noted in Moore v. Hamiland, a defendant can hardly be faulted on some concept of tardiness when he invokes the right to self-representation as soon as he recognizes it's to his benefit. The government argues that counsel is the primary right here, but this court stated in Cain v. Peters that that is incorrect. Actually, the right to self-representation and the right to counsel are equivalent. Counsel is merely the default, and requiring a defendant to make a clear, knowing, and intelligent waiver of that right supports the reason for a proper Feretta inquiry. But it does not excuse its absence, and it does not grant the trial court total discretion to deny a proper request. In addition, the government argues that the court need not hold a hearing if it is going to reject a request to proceed pro se. But a Feretta hearing and its requirement does not depend on whether a court thinks it's a good or a bad idea that a defendant represent himself. Once there is a proper request, there must be a hearing. This is not because the defendant has invoked some procedural entitlement to Feretta, as the government states in its brief, but it's because the defendant has invoked the constitutional Sixth Amendment right to self-representation. Holding the Feretta hearing ensures that that right is exercised properly. The government attributes far more discretion to a trial court than it actually has. The Feretta court stated that this right to self-representation is a personal right. It's a right of which the defendant bears the personal consequences, and as a result of that, the defendant must be free to decide whether counsel is to his advantage. This right is the defendant's to invoke. It's not the trial court's to take away with complete discretion, as it did in this case. The trial court was unreasonable in denying the request without holding a Feretta hearing. And because of that, we ask this court to grant the petition for habeas relief. If the court has no further questions, I will allow my co-counsel to handle them during rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. O'Connell.
May it please the Court, Erin O'Connell, an Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Respondent Warden. The State Trial Court in this case correctly denied petitioner's mid-trial request to alter his representation on two grounds. First, the trial court properly denied this request as untimely. Second, the request was one for hybrid representation as opposed to pure self-representation. Thus, it didn't fall within the scope of Feretta. On the first issue of this hybrid representation, I just want to remind the court that this is a habeas corpus action. So therefore, although there may be other ways of construing the record, the question is whether the state appellate court gave it a permissible reading or a reading that fell within the grounds of objective reasonableness when it deemed this to be a request for hybrid representation. There is more than enough support for that holding by the appellate court. As the court noted when my opposing counsel was arguing, there was an apparent motion to proceed as co-counsel that preceded the trial by one day. The court referred to it as a motion to proceed with co-counsel at Supplemental Appendix 45. Unfortunately, the actual motion itself is not in the record, so that's the only indication that we have that this would be that type of a motion. The first time that petitioner asked to proceed, to alter his representation, he made clear that he only wanted to recall and recross-examine witnesses. He stated, at the outset, I would like to represent myself, but I would be fine if this court were to appoint my attorneys to act as co-counsel. The court would have been reasonable to construe this not as a request for self-representation, but as a request for the type of hybrid representation that Feretta does not protect. There was a second request that petitioner made. It happened at two separate times, but it should be viewed as part of the same ongoing hearing. This was at the end of the first day of trial. Petitioner said, "I'd like to reiterate my request to proceed pro se." At this time, the court didn't hold a very detailed hearing on what he meant by that. However, the next morning, before any further trial events had occurred, petitioner again stated to the court, "I want to reiterate my request." The court at that time asked him point blank, "Do you want to represent yourself?" His response was, "Yes, with some exceptions." There couldn't be a clear indication by a pro se defendant that he intended to request hybrid representation as opposed to self-representation.
There's never any indication of the distinction between co-counsel and standby counsel, I presume.
There is...
In his case, does he know the difference?
It's not clear that he does know the difference. Co-counsel would be, if in his particular request, whether he unambiguously requested self-representation or this hybrid representation, he would be requesting co-counsel.
Mm-hmm.
If the court were to deem his request one for self-representation, it would then have the discretion, regardless of whether petitioner requested it, to appoint standby counsel. I'd like to move on to the second reason that the state court reasonably denied this request, and that it was clearly untimely. I believe my opposing counsel errs in stating that this was never an express holding by the court. The court stated twice on the morning of the second day of trial, when it held its extended colloquy with the defendant, that it was construing his request as untimely. It stated once that it was not going to allow petitioner to change his representation midway through the trial. It stated a second time that if petitioner were hypothetically raising his right for self-representation, that would be something that the court would consider were the request to be timely, indicating that it did not consider petitioner's request to be timely.
Did the Illinois appellate court address it in that way as untimely?
No. The trial court expressly held that it was denying it as untimely. The Illinois appellate court then opted to construe the record as being a request for hybrid representation.
Isn't our review directed at the Illinois appellate opinion as opposed to the trial court?
I have a couple of responses to that. The first is that the trial court's determination that petitioner's request was untimely is entitled to deference because it was never disavowed by the Illinois appellate court. It was simply not addressed. Furthermore, for there to be a constitutional violation in this case, as is a prerequisite for habeas relief, petitioner would have to show that his constitutional Faretta right was violated. The Faretta right, however, is conditioned on the making of a timely request. And in Faretta, the request was made several weeks before trial. Here, the request was made mid-trial. There is no constitutional right to interrupt the proceedings and switch from being represented by counsel to proceeding pro se. So the answer is, on the first ground, yes, it should be entitled to deference because it was never disavowed. Second, even if it were a de novo matter, this court shouldn't grant habeas relief because a state trial court acts within its discretion to deny a request that's made mid-trial. I did want to spend a moment to discuss this case of Moore versus Haviland. This is what the petitioner relied on to a large extent in its reply brief. And at first blush, Moore does appear somewhat problematic to the respondent in this case because that court did hold that a request mid-trial can be construed as timely. Moore should not govern the result in this case because that case is both distinguishable and, to the extent it held as it did on the timeliness, is poorly reasoned and in conflict, actually, with the decisions of two other circuits, the Ninth Circuit and the Fifth Circuit. On the first issue, Moore is distinguishable in that it did not have any state court holding on the timeliness issue to which it should defer. So this would be on the first ground I was arguing that the trial court, the trial court's ruling is entitled to deference. In Moore, it stated that it would not accord any deference because neither the trial court nor the appellate court had ever relied on timeliness as a grounds. Here, however, because the trial court did rely on those grounds, it should be accorded deference. Now, on this issue of its holding under a de novo analysis that the request was timely, apparently the court did not realize that it was issuing a ruling that conflicted with that of other circuits. The court does not cite to any case law whatsoever in support of its holding that the mid-trial request was timely because it was done as soon as the defendant could do so. That is in direct conflict with the Fifth Circuit in, I believe, Wood versus Quarterman and the Ninth Circuit in Marshall v. Taylor. Both of those cases have recognized that Ferretta has limited itself to the making of a request pre-trial. Therefore, that a state court at least acts consistently with the Constitution if it denies a request that is made in the middle of trial. I would just, because this is a habeas case, it's particularly problematic, as it was in that case, to just simply design a new rule of constitutional law that would entitle a defendant to a mid-trial change in his representation. Here, the state trial court acted perfectly consistently with Ferretta and was within its rights to deem this request to be untimely and deny it on that ground. So therefore, even though Moore does lend some support to petitioner's argument, this court should not be persuaded by that reasoning. If the court has no further questions, I would have to take a seat. We would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court denying habeas relief.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Callahan, I hope you're finished with finals as well. Good.
I'd like to make 3 points. First, the government characterized the first request as a mid-trial request. I'd like to reiterate that while the trial had begun, the first request was made during the recess of the very first day after the government had called its first witness. He told the judge that he didn't want to slow the trial down and that he would like to represent himself. In Moore versus Haviland, the request to proceed pro se was made once the trial was underway, and it was not untimely because the grounds for the defendant's dissatisfaction had not arose until the trial had begun. This is similar to this case, where the defendant put the court on notice that such a request could be made. And as Your Honor mentioned, the timeliness issue was not addressed by the Illinois Appellate Court nor by the trial court during either of the first two requests that Mr. Duncan made. He requested first during that first recess that I mentioned, again at the end of the first day. The timeliness issue wasn't mentioned until the second day. The Illinois Appellate Court didn't address it at all in refusing to overturn his conviction.
Well, the only thing we got, of course, on the pretrial motion, which was, I think, clearly timely, was that he asked to proceed as co-counsel, right?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I think he was confused about characterizing it between co-counsel and standby counsel. He did, during that request, at some point mention that he did want to proceed pro se before the trial began.
What's the evidence of that?
I don't have the record in front of me, Your Honor. But I do believe that he could have been requesting standby counsel in it, and was not entirely clear as to the difference between the two.
Well, it seems to me that pretrial request, whatever it was specifically, provides some kind of a background for what he said later. I mean, if he said something pretrial, I would assume the judge would assume that he was reiterating whatever his request was when he said something later. It's a little different terminology, but wouldn't that be part of the context?
Also within the context, Your Honor, is the fact that he withdrew that particular request, that motion, and the day before the trial when he was withdrawing the request, he told the judge that he was withdrawing it for now, but if he did become dissatisfied with his counsel as the case began, he would be requesting to proceed pro se. And the third point that I'd like to make is the issue of reasonableness. Supreme Court precedent states that when someone makes this request to represent himself, there must be a hearing. Any interpretation of Mr. Duncan's request, "I don't want to slow this trial down, I want to get out of the way, I would like to represent myself," as anything other than a request to represent himself, is inherently unreasonable. Thank you.
All right, thank you, and we'll take this case under advisement. I wanted to express appreciation to the court, to, of course, Notre Dame Law School, and to you, Ms. Callahan and Ms. Linsky, and certainly to Mr. Palmer and your firm as well for its support in vigorously advocating on behalf of the client. Thank you.